please.
Our next case is number 12,036. CMH Homes, doing business as Oakwood Homes, seeks a special use exception to place a manufactured home, section 115-23C and 115-210 of the Sussex County Zoning Code. The property is located at the north side of Hoot Owl Lane, approximately 500 feet east of Irons Lane, Road 348. The 911 address is 34979 Hoot Owl Lane, Dagsboro. The zoning district is AR2. The tax map is District 134, Map 7, Parcel 191.
No, I'll open the last one. Somebody else do this one.
All right, again, we'll open the floor up for discussion.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I think there was some question about the standard that we need to deal with here and some of the factual things in the record. And we have two cases that are factually very similar, but there are some distinctions between them. So my comments here are specific to case number 12036, but some of them may bleed over to the next one as well. What we're looking at here is this is a special use exception under 115-23C. As part of that, the applicant has to demonstrate that it also complies with 115-20A1. That's a threshold issue. Mm-hmm. And the first, there's a lot of technical requirements there, some of which are, you know, the axles have to be removed, has to be permanently affixed to a foundation, siding has to be continuous. There didn't appear to be any dispute to that effect. That's still something that in your calculus you would need to decide. But there, the biggest one I think was the contention that was raised by the opposition was whether or not it met the first standard, which is that, and I'll quote, says the lot is not within a major subdivision prior to the effective date of this section or is not specifically prohibited by recorded covenants. And you may recall that we got some restrictions that were submitted into the record. And really what the applicant needed to demonstrate was that the use was not specifically prohibited by those restrictions. So when you look at paragraph 7 of the restrictions, it says no trailer, and then it goes on to say, because there's a list of a bunch of different things, shall be permitted on any lot. And I note that those restrictions were created in 1974. So the first real issue is whether or not this proposed unit is prohibited by those restrictions. So I wanted to point to you, because we had had a lot of discussion about this case over the last couple meetings and at the public hearing. The definition of manufactured home under 115-4, which is the one that has our definitions for the code, says defines manufactured home, and then it says aka house trailer, single wide, double wide, mobile home. That's the and also known as term for it. That definition was amended in 2010. And likewise, when you look at the definition of manufactured home park, it also says aka trailer park, trailer court, manufactured home park, or community. That definition was also amended in 2010. The ordinance that amended it included a provision that stated that anywhere in our code where the words house trailer, single wide, double wide, mobile home, or trailer were ever found were to be replaced with the term manufactured home. And I note that because I think one of the arguments that was raised in the opposition's letter through their attorney was that historically trailers manufactured homes had been referred to as trailers. They were one in the same. And the issue is whether or not those restrictive covenants, which date back to not quite as far back as our zoning code, but pretty close to it, whether it referred to, would identify this as a trailer or a manufactured home. So that's a threshold issue for you all as to whether or not it meets that. Regardless of how you rule on that, if you were to say that these restrictions prohibit it, then it's a denial. If you say that no, they don't prohibit it, then we can move on to the next step, which does it meet the special use exception standard? I would encourage you, as you go through your discussion here, to rule on both. I think it would be helpful for me as counsel and assisting you in the writing of the findings, but also to the public. The other issue that came up, and I know that this had been something that had been talked about, was whether the applicant had relied on its detriment to something that the county official had provided as far as the building permit. And I mentioned this previously, I'll mention it again. That issue is not entirely relevant to the issue at hand, which is, does the use substantially affect adversely the uses of neighboring adjacent properties? In order for someone to, essentially Delaware has a, it's clear that there's relatively few, if any, cases where a landowner will not be held responsible for knowing what the applicable land restrictions are. And the general rule is that if a permit was issued illegally or in violation of law or under mistake of fact, that does not necessarily confer a vested right upon the person to whom it's issued, even though that person has made substantial expenditures and reliance thereon. Every person is presumed to know the extent of the powers of municipal authorities. And this has been found in case law throughout our state. And it's generally only in, it's a kind of an exceptional situation where, and even in exceptional cases, the court has refused to say that, you know, you really have been burdened here. So I just wanted to make that known to you. I know we'd had some discussion, but I can't remember because it's been a couple meetings how much I delved into it. But I did want to at least mention that to you. I don't know if that spurs any questions for me, but I certainly wanted to let you all know that as part of this, it's, you know, you need to look at it as a two-step process. And I'm here if you need any questions.
Okay. Thank you for that.
The one on the permit, you're saying that it's up to the guy got the permit to know all the rules about that permit.
It is
everything.
It is the way a permit is, it's presumed the landowner knows those zoning regulations. So, you know, I think this was, you know, we've had that issue before, you know, you got to know what you're getting into, what you can do on your property, and the code is clearly, you know, is a document that you can look at. And just an illegally granted permit or, you know, incorrect permit where there might be factual differences or.
Let's say somebody else got the permit. The owner didn't, and it's still his responsibility?
Ultimately, it's the landowner's responsibility to know what he can or cannot do to
even though you hire
on their property.
The builder.
Even though you hire somebody to build that, and they got the permit.
Well, here's the thing. We're talking about something that's it's an equitable equities issue. Mm-hmm. So it really gets to a balance of the equities. And that when you catch it early, like it's here, that equity is not different than if you've had something perhaps that's been there for 20 years.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, it's a little different, and that's where there's the factual thing that the courts look at. But the courts have come down pretty strong on that there's few, if any, times where it'll come into play. Okay. There's been some case law to that. So
that's something you really don't have to look at.
I don't think it's relevant. I think the issue before you is first off the restriction covenant issue.
Yeah.
And then the second one is, does it substantially affect adversely? And, you know, there were some for and against that was presented to you. You make up your own mind on that.
Which the covenant issue usually is not our consideration, but in this case it is.
Right.
That's correct. It's very rarely something that we will take into consideration. This board doesn't enforce those, but this happens to be one of those cases where from a factual and legal determination, you have to make that based on what we have in the record.
And I think guess what? That was a hang-up because we don't know that, right?
Yeah, we don't enforce them. And I know that when people come in and say, well, that violates our restrictive covenants,
right?
We say, well, that, you know, we can't enforce them. That's a, you go to the court of chancery for that, not us.
Sure.
This is just one of those ones where it's a factual thing that is a threshold question.
Right.
And, so. I for one appreciate you clarifying.
Yeah, I appreciate
that
you clarifying it
because that's where I was kind of hung up.
Yeah, I was too. So I appreciate that, clarifying that for us, or help me anyway.
I agree that we need to address both issues. But for starters, I don't think that it does meet that criteria.
Right.
It doesn't. I mean, it's obvious given the given the covenants that we were provided.
Right.
I think it clearly states that.
Okay.
But there again, on the actual standards, I think we should probably discuss that as well. And
yep.
I think we all came here tonight with our own thoughts and ideas on that. I don't necessarily need to go first on it.
Mr. Bourbon?
Put it on the wrong end.
I mean, if you want me to leave it off.
Mr. Mills?
Yeah, you've got property values.
Yeah.
Right. And that was the biggest concern.
Right.
And, you know, we didn't hear from the applicant anything. It was an opinion that he had it would not affect, that it, you know, it was the same. But we did from the opposition's reports, had two local real estate agent appraisers.
Right.
That noted it would have a negative effect on the property values. I believe it was Mr. Emmert's report was especially insightful, as he noted that the trend of the neighborhood and the estimate percentage effect on the home on the property values. That carried more weight with me.
Yeah, I think it's out of character of that neighborhood. The pictures you showed us, and I am familiar with that area, and that home is a nice home, but it's out of character of the rest of the homes in that development.
Right.
So I think that makes a big difference there. What I do.
Those are two of the standards that it's not meeting.
And it is created by the applicant.
Well. You know, and the applicant suggested it was created by Sussex County officials, and I sympathize with that situation. you know, once again, Oakwood Homes, they've been, you know, in business a long time. Certainly know that there are limits where they can place mobile homes.
Yes.
Manufactured homes, whatever you
want
to call it. So it could have easily been an oversight on theirs as well. I don't know. But it doesn't change the fact.
It will definitely affect the essential character of the neighborhood.
Right.
Definitely.
I agree.
Yes.
So.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that 100%.
Well, I'm not going to rehash my thoughts on discrepancies in the application for the variance, but tonight I'm going to review a few of the homeowners' testimonies. First and foremost, the mobile home was still on wheels when planning and zoning was informed of the issue, and Oakwood Homes was informed of the issue and decided to keep on
proceeding.
So they incurred more financial burden on their own. They could have stopped right there and solved this issue.
I agree.
We heard testimony that it was on a foundation. Well, truly, it's a false foundation. It's a mobile home. It's more of a decoration than it is a foundation. We had 15 people here in protest in 5 letters. That's 20 people. There's 26 lots and 26 owners in that community. That's 80% of the community either turned up or supplied letters in opposition to this variance. And one homeowner said she owns a vacant lot, and giving this gentleman a variance for a mobile home would just open up the door for another mobile home that would further diminish their property value. So I think it's very clear that the residents' property value would be affected in a major way by granting this variance.
I concur with those comments he had just said.
I make a motion that we deny the application. That it does not meet the standards for granting a special use exemption, that it will substantially affect adversely the uses of the adjacent and neighboring property.
Do I have a second to that motion?
A second that, Mr. Chairman.
And I guess are we going to talk about the restrictive covenants as well? Is there a determination on that as well?
Okay.
Yep.
I don't know if you're going to address that as part of your motion, Ms. McGee.
I can do that as soon as I find it on here.
Well, we talked about the covenants.
Just that it does not...
Covenants is clear.
Yeah, the covenants make it clear of what can and cannot be there, and it's clearly stated in those and does not meet their requirements.
Requirement at this time.
I'll second that.
You're seconding the motion?
Yes, all of it. Or...
That's all right.
We both said at the same time.
We both said at the same time,
didn't know which one you accepted.
Okay.
I'll take it.
He did. All right. Okay, I have a motion by Ms. McGee and a second by Mr. Mills that we deny case number 12,036. All those in favor of the motion? Mr. Workman?
Aye, for those reasons stated.
Mr. Mayor?
Aye, for the reasons stated.
Again, Ms. McGee?
Aye, for my reasons.
Mr. Mills?
Aye, for the reasons stated.
And I, Mr. Callaway, for the reasons previous reasons had been stated. So by a vote of 5-0, case number 12,036 is denied. Okay. Next.